Blog Talk.
Nazim Rashid, and we certainly appreciate his music this morning from Renaissance, River Nile, from the album Remembrance. That album is available on Amazon and in their local Barnes & Noble bookstores, and we certainly appreciate Nazim Rashid. Let's try to get that name together here. This brother has been a very, very large part of our lives and co-host on this show for many years. I'll say it again, Nazim Rashid. And we certainly appreciate him for sharing his music and his talents with us. His show follows the student-to-teacher show this morning as the show is called Reconnected, right here on the blogtalkradio.com network. And this is Professor Applewhite, and I'm saying good morning to all you listeners out there. I just managed to look at the profiles this morning. Over 19,000 of you have reviewed the profile and listened to the show, and I am just so proud to say that I appreciate the number of people who have been involved in just listening and supporting the work that White Apple Institute is doing. Our sponsor, White Apple Institute, works with adult learners who are trying to, continue to pursue school at college and maintain work, either, finding work or retaining work. And this is many times a challenge in our society due to legislative issues and, unfortunately, societal stereotypes. Yes, we have those stereotypes. Well, listen, I wanted to share with you this morning. First off, let me apologize. Last week, I couldn't get on the Internet. We were traveling to, the Bahamas. And it was a wonderful, wonderful cruise ship and experience. And when we landed in Florida, back in Florida on Saturday morning, for some reason our Internet connection could not connect in, so we missed listeners. And that was for 2 weeks in a row there. So please forgive us for not being able to let you know that there would be no show scheduled until this morning, which is May 28th. And, I'm just really happy to be here. I can't even tell you. Every time that I begin this show on Saturday mornings, even in the preparation of this show, I give all glory to God for the ability, the opportunity that I have to share the knowledge that has been shared with me through the years as I have progressed as a professor in the field of educational psychology. And also as a spiritual woman who has been and continues to be on a journey of learning. And I am truly a student and truly a teacher. And my quest is to ensure, I feel my purpose is to ensure that all of you keep that in mind, that we are all students and teachers. At various times in our life, we switch roles, and we are learning from each other or teaching each other. So keep that in mind. This is not just about the academic teacher, the academic focus in the classroom. This is about teaching life lessons. And so that's why we have a variety of topics that are related to school and work, because that is our emphasis, is to keep people involved on that level, because that does bring some substance to life. But also that we want also, you know, we want to motivate people to understand that going to school and participating in the workforce is not all there is, that helps us to balance and to have the basic needs met, like, you know, food, clothing, shelter, all those great things. But also that we, in some way, become lifelong learners. And lifelong learning means that we continue to be that, to play that student and teacher role within our lives so that we can continue to grow. You know, and it's about the journey. It's truly about the journey. And if you just, for a moment, allow yourself some quietness. Please, allow yourself some quiet time during the week and really reflect on your journey. Not necessarily the destination, but on every day that you get up and you go about your day and you do the things that you need to do in order to go to school, you know, college or vocational training or a workshop to help you on your job, or that you're looking for a job and you make that effort to get that resume out or to do some special personal development courses that are available in many agencies to learn how to interview correctly or to ask for a raise, okay, or to be in a position where you can look at promotion. So all of these things mean something to your value of life, but they are not your life. That your life is surrounded around your spiritual journey and who you are as an individual. And to look at the school and work thing as supporting elements to that journey, okay? So we hope that you catch that message, because that is truly the message of White Apple Institute, and certainly one that we want to promote throughout the student-to-teacher radio show on the Internet. So this morning, in speaking about these variety of topics, we wanted to focus on drugs. And you've heard, oh my goodness, I know you have heard so many conversations about drugs. We wanted to make this a little different. So the staff of White Apple Institute got together, and we talked about what is it that people are missing in the discussion about drugs. What are we missing? Because every time that you think about a drug, what do you think about? When somebody says, are you on drugs? Do you take drugs? Do you use drugs? Do you have any drugs? Yes. Yes, and yes. Now, you might be saying, wait a minute, Professor, oh, wait a minute, I don't do drugs. But the reality is that we do. All of us do drugs in one way or another. And you know what I'm finding, even when I look in the dictionary or ask other professionals in the field, I find that We still have this stereotype, yeah, I'll call it a stereotype, of what a drug really is. Even the dictionary in itself talks about a drug being a substance used in either dyeing or chemical operations, okay? Now that's okay. That's not too bad in chemical operations. But I'll go back to that in a minute, because I think that's going to help us lead into what I'm trying to get across this morning from from the staff of White Apple Institute, and I certainly appreciate all of you who've had an input in this particular topic, from the board of directors to our student our students that have written in and given their comments to this. We certainly want to look at, evaluate the next comment that, let's see, is this Merriam-Webster? Yeah, this is Webster's dictionary that I'm using. And he discusses that a drug is a substance used as a medication or in the preparation of medication, according to the Food and Drug and Cosmetic Act, or Food, Drug, and Administration, FDA. These everything that's said about drugs is about an outside issue, and you know, the prevention of disease, the intervention, the treatment interventions, a substance like in our food. There are drugs in our food, believe it or not, and a substance intended to use as a component of a medication. Let's see this last one here. A commodity, this really got me, a commodity that is not sellable or for which there is no demand, used in the phrase drug on the market, something that causes addiction or habituation. Oh, come on. Yes, that's true, but there's something very important missing from all of this. Do you want to know what it is? Well, let me tell you now, so that you can get a real grasp on what I'm trying to say this morning. We produce drugs. Yes, yes, yes. Now, I want you to just indulge me for a minute, as I ask you many times to do as we learn these things together. Indulge me for a moment as I discuss what one of my very, very good I use this abnormal psychology textbook many, many times as I teach abnormal psychology. It's by Butcher, Minecka, and Hoadley. And the best part about this book is that the authors bring out that we produce our own drugs. The human body, now you can write this down if you want, so you can check out what Professor's saying here. The human body produces its own opium-like substances. And you know what they're called? Endorphins. Endorphins in the brain and the pituitary gland. Now, you don't have to remember all the big words there. They're really unimportant as far as the message that I'm trying to get across to you, that these substances are produced, okay, in our own body. And so our creator knew the value of putting endorphins within the blueprint of who we are. And they are believed, they play a role in our reaction to pain. Yes. And most people, for whatever reason, and I mean, of course, there's going to be a percentage that are going to throw off this research, but most people take a drug because they are uncomfortable. They are suffering from some type of discomfort, okay? And so when they are suffering from this discomfort, what happens is that the human being seeks comfort. Now, let's not forget who we are as human beings, okay? We are not perfect. We live in an imperfect society, definitely. Our environments are imperfect. The design of our body is a perfect blueprint. However, the environment makes a tremendous impact, and genetics. And the genetics may have, in some ancestral way, I'm talking about your ancestors long before you came into existence, may have had some interaction with the environment that caused some changes in the way our brain works and in the way our bodies work, okay? So when we think about it from that perspective, we can see that there's changes that have happened in our brain that make our the endorphins that are already inside of us, we try to increase them in some kind of way. Now, how can we do that? If we're having some kind of underproduction, let's say we're not producing enough endorphins in our body to move us from the state of discomfort to comfort, then what happens is we start moving towards this craving for other types of drugs, usually narcotic drugs, okay? Oh, boy, now this is going to blow your mind now, okay? So a lot of the research that we've been doing on the role of endorphins in our body and in drug addiction hasn't been very scientific at this point, okay? And there, unfortunately, to date, there's no real effective treatment for this, okay? However, I think that it's important for us to recognize that we do produce drugs within our own body, okay? And these endorphins, and I can go into a number of big words to tell you all about the endorphins and how they can work actually to help us with depression and anxiety disorders and many other issues. However, I think it's important for us to recognize that as we get into this lack of production of these endorphins that are already within us, that this craving for other types of drugs to make us feel comfortable becomes greater and greater. And you know, here's where it starts, especially with our children, especially with us when we were children. Are you ready for this? Think about your first soda. You probably can't even remember back that far, many of us. I know I can. It becomes very difficult. But I know there was a time when I had a Coke, the good old Coca-Cola. And Coke in itself is a derivative of cocaine. And so the first onset for many people has been either the Coca-Cola that we drink, and Coca-Cola is the brand name, but Coke in itself is what I really want to focus on because I'm not trying to project anything on any particular manufacturer because Pepsi uses the Coke also, the base of Coke, and also many other sodas with that Coke addition or base. They are there to make you feel better. Don't you feel better when you have a Coke? Okay? Some of us do. Some of us drink Coke excessively. And I've noticed that many times students will come in to the classroom and want to get into, we do a behavior management plan. And in that behavior management plan, I ask the students, and I'm asking you to do the same today, as students and teachers, to look at how much Coke or soda that you drink that has caffeine in it, okay, in addition to the Coke, okay? Now, we have to be realistic here. The cocaine that was originally used in the first production of is not a tremendous amount. It is not a tremendous amount of cocaine. It is so minimal now that it's hard to trace, okay? But it's still there, so I want you to keep that in mind. So now with that, we have caffeine on top of that. Caffeine in the sodas and caffeine in our coffee. Now, In the mornings, many of us wake up in the morning and say, I need my coffee. Or they stop at the local convenience store and fill up what they claim, what we claim, is a cup of soda. My friends, I haven't seen a cup of soda in any convenience store, and I don't know, I don't even think I've ever seen a cup. A cup is 8 ounces, first off, 8 ounces. So if you look at 8 ounces of Coke or any other soda that has the caffeine in it, or 8 ounces of coffee, and compare it to what you actually fill up those big, big cups with, okay? You're filling up a 32-ounce or more, or 24-ounce or more soda, which means that you're filling up to 3 cups of soda. And when you drink a 24-ounce cup of coffee, that's 3 times the amount of caffeine going in your system, which is a stimulant, okay? A stimulant that increases feelings of being alert and even affects your confidence level. If you're feeling a little tired, it will actually make you feel less fatigued. Yes, it will. So that's why we start reaching for Cokes and coffee in the morning to stay awake longer, okay? And to feel that, believe it or not, stimulants are also used to increase our sex drive and make us more, I guess it's because we feel better and more alert, okay? And we don't feel so fatigued. So if we don't feel those feelings, then we are more open to discovering the possibility of romance in our lives, whether it's with someone that we've been with for a while or with our spouses. So isn't that interesting? Note that when you're going through your week and focusing on your spiritual journey about how you feel about the use of Coke and coffee in your life. The coca is cocaine. All right. And according to our, we have a, you know, I've mentioned this before, all psychologists use a book that's very much like our, I mean, we go to this book for everything. It's called a DSM. It's not necessary for you to remember this, but just remember that there is a book. And this book tells us what things to look for in an individual when we think that something may be going on with their use of caffeine, overuse of caffeine, and what's the other one I mentioned? Do you remember? Cocaine. So when we find that, We know that we can look for this as an organic, get this one, mental disorder. Wow. Come on, Professor. Are you serious? How can coffee be described as something that could lead to an organic mental disorder? It's also referred to as caffeineism. Ooh. Caffeineism, and guess what the symptoms are? Think about it. If you just remove yourself from coffee and Coke for the week, just try a week. Okay, all right, easy on yourself. Try a day. And see if you feel feelings of restlessness, a little nervousness, a little bit of maybe insomnia, Could be, because you're so used to being elevated feelings. So now you feel the fatigue, okay, and then you feel the restlessness because you are tired, okay? Could even be exhibited in muscle twitching. Muscle twitching and some stomach complaints, okay? So this follows usually, this could be coffee, even tea, the cola, which is the Coke, or chocolate, too much chocolate. You know, everything's about balance, folks. Now, you know, I mean, a professor's not saying, you know, don't eat any chocolate or don't drink any soda or anything like that. It's about balance. And it's about understanding what 8 ounces is, what a cup really is. Okay? So when you're looking at something and it says one serving equaling 8 ounces, look again at how many servings you're drinking. Okay? And then as you go back again and get another 24-ounce cup of coffee or Coca-Cola, that you're putting in another 3 times the amount of what that cup is, if it's 24 ounces. And we're not even going to talk about those that get the 32-ounce or 48-ounce cups, okay, of soda. And now recently, and I have one myself, I have a 64-ounce container that I fill up with water, and I drink that every day. That's my baseline water, is to have at least 64 ounces, which is the requirement for our daily intake of water, okay? So we've got caffeineism covered. Now, nicotine, okay? Now, I know you know a lot about the cigarettes and chewing tobacco, cigars, and all of that, and you know, nicotine is even used as an insecticide, okay? Yeah, believe it or not, it's used as an insecticide. So, yeah, not a really great drug here, okay? Yeah, I did say drug. Did I miss that somewhere? That caffeine is a drug. Yes. And nicotine is a drug. All right, so as long as we've got that covered here. Now, you know about what the Surgeon General says, so I don't have to go into that, okay? But what I wanted to talk about is the symptoms after you ingest nicotine, okay? And what happens after just a person starts using it for a few weeks, okay? And what happens is they get a lot of anxiety, a lot of frustration, okay? And you know that. You've seen people when they need a cigarette, okay? I said that the wrong way. We feel when we are withdrawn from the nicotine a sense of irritability and frustration, even anger, okay? We want that cigarette. We have difficulty even concentrating on anything, okay? Our heart rate even goes up, okay? And many people are afraid, and I've heard it over and over again with students who put this in their behavior change plan, that they feel a sense of that they're going to gain weight. And some of them do actually gain weight, okay? And, you know, we have withdrawal symptoms, withdrawal like headaches, insomnia again, lack of sleep, coughing, all kinds of things that can impact, get this, the same thing with caffeineism, can impact the way we perform on the job. Perform on the job and perform at school. I invite you, listeners, to call in to 1-646-727-3758. And, you know, I do have the chat line open, so if any of you are interested in writing to me as opposed to talking on live air, make sure you go ahead and send me a chat, okay? and let me know what you think about some of the things I'm saying here, because this is pretty interesting stuff when you really think about drugs, school, and work, okay? Drugs, school, and work. And so we're sharing in this discussion about the impact of all drugs, okay? Now, we explained the term drugs, and we have to understand that there are three ways right now that I can come up with, and if you can come up with more than that, this is fine, but I'm talking about drugs that we either get from the pharmaceutical methods, and that means the doctor writes a prescription for them, okay, and many of them work in the same fashion as the endorphins that are already inside of us. Yes, isn't that interesting? And then, of course, there's the drugs that we can get from the street, okay, and that's unfortunately the general stereotype of the word drugs is always it's associated with the street. But drugs are at the pharmacy, and they are the same drugs, as far as the way that it's distributed or packaged, but certainly with the same intent to move you from a state of discomfort to comfort. And then we cannot forget the drugs that are manufactured within our own bodies called endorphins, okay? So we're having this discussion because I wanted you to understand that there are many things that impact our performance at work and school and that we may not even be aware of. So we need to become more aware of the drugs in our world, the world around us, the environment around us. Now, there is an answer, of course, and you know that there's an answer to especially nicotine and caffeine use. And, of course, the first one is just stop. Just stop using it. But that's hard. That's not easy for people, especially if it moves you from discomfort to comfort. I mean, that would be like almost admitting I like to be uncomfortable in my life, okay? So we have to move to a point where we, again, back to that word balance, okay? There's been so many treatment programs that help people with stopping their habits of smoking, okay? But, you know, this is really, really not very encouraging. That it's a 25% success rate. Ooh, yucky. And that's not a high success rate. And the reason for that is that in order for us to stop any behavior that makes us feel good. Now listen carefully to what I'm saying here. This is important because this goes with every behavior that we can think of. Okay? Especially, I'm talking about conscious behavior, okay, not the ones that we're not aware of that are associated with more severe mental disorders, okay, but the ones that we're conscious of. So we go back to this balance and the fact that we have to make a decision of what we can replace. So if any of you are listening as parents today, if any of you are listening as teachers today, what I want you to realize is that before we can talk to someone about whether or not they can stop using a drug, we have to talk about what we can replace with that drug. And unfortunately, many times, as we find in alcoholism, the drug alcohol, oh boy, is that a rough one. We don't have time to go into that today, but we will next week talk a little bit more about alcohol as a drug and the effects. But
don't stop just because someone says stop. We stop because we have an alternative. When people stop drinking alcohol, one of the things that I notice is that they increase their intake in chocolate. They increase their intake in coffee, caffeine, which in some way, the brain, oh, and don't forget smoking, nicotine. The brain interprets that as at least some type of relief that can be associated with the lack of alcohol. Okay, like I said, again, we'll get into that a little bit more next week. But I hope I've given you some very interesting things to think about here, especially the one where our bodies manufacture drugs. So the next time somebody says to you or talks about drugs, I want you to open up your mind, step outside of the box, and I want you to recognize that drugs is not necessarily a nasty term. It's not necessarily, as many people may use the word, sinful term, because we are created with our own set of drugs to help us. So our Creator knew that being on this planet, being in this world, that we would have some challenges, that we'll need to have endorphins to manage our frustrations. Did you get that? I don't know if you really got that. Why don't you think about that for a minute? That our Creator, by whatever name you call God, knew that there was something that needed to be created within us to overcome some of the things we're dealing with within our own environment as we grow, or it wouldn't be there. So the drugs, the endorphins that we manufacture in our body are not necessarily sinful things. And as I read to you earlier, the endorphins that we use, what do they do again? These are substances that stimulate and play a role in our reaction to pain or to this, some type of discomfort. And, you know, we interpret pain in different ways. Pain is physical. That's the one we know a lot about, right? The physical pain. But do we know anything about mental pain? Oh, gosh, Professor, what are you talking about? Mental pain. Yes, there is mental pain. And so when we talk about physical, here's what we think. Many of us focus on, let's give an example, a broken leg. Okay? So we have a broken leg, and that is a physical issue. Now, what do we do when we have a broken leg? We go to the doctor, and the doctor puts a cast on our leg and gives us some medicine, usually an opiate-based medicine. Yes, opiate, from the opium flower. And we take the opiate, and it makes us feel better, but of course it's controlled, the controlled amount of opiate, and we go home and we wait weeks for our leg to heal. Now, that's the physical part. Now you want to know what this mental pain is. I know you want to understand this mental pain that I'm talking about. Here it is. if someone is suffering from, let's say, bipolar disorder, and when we talk about the bipolar disorder, you know, we have to understand that there are many people that are diagnosed with bipolar disorder now, which is, you know, part of the depression, mood disorders, manic behavior. And I do want to explain a little bit more about bipolar disorder, but I don't want to take up a lot of your time getting into the big words on that, you know. And I promise, many of my students have written to me and said sometimes when I have different guest speakers on the show, they don't understand what they're talking about because we use such, sometimes we use terms that are very hard for us to understand. And so I want to make sure that I don't do that to you. So let me see if I can break that down a little better than books do. Bipolar disorder is, like I said, depression. And there's some mixed up stuff going on, okay? And some of the mixed up stuff that goes on is that sometimes for a week, sometimes for just a day, we have times where we become very manic, which means excited, and we are just charged up and do a lot of things that we normally would not do. And people start using that word again. Remember, we had a whole series of discussions about that word crazy. And we want to make sure that we don't associate that word crazy with what we're talking about, okay? When we talk about bipolar disorder, okay, which is, I'm using that as one of the most common things that I hear students talk about. We have two forms. We have the bipolar disorder that bipolar, we call it bipolar 1, and that's a little bit more serious. Bipolar 2 is when a person doesn't have the full-blown, what we call manic episodes, but does go through cycles of feeling a lot of depression and just can't seem to sometimes move on and move away from the situation that they're in. And they just want to lay in bed and cover over their head and forget the cruel world out there. And sometimes the world is cruel. But there are many things that we can look at as blessings. Okay? And don't ever forget that Professor will always say that to you, is that there are many, many things that are happening all around us every single second that are blessings, okay? But, you know, we get overwhelmed with the bad stuff, and so it moves us into more depression and more depression. Now, if you are diagnosed with a bipolar disorder, in the same way that a person who broke their leg is diagnosed with a broken leg, okay? Then what happens is that we've got to fix it, right? We've got to find a way to put a cast on the neurons in our brain that are not working right, some kind of way to bandage it up and make it feel better. We don't think about that, do we? What do you mean, bandage it up? We can't go into the brain and just bandage up the neurons in there. No. We use medication to do that, and we use counseling to do that. We have different exercises that we do to enhance a person's positive experiences so that we can minimize the manic episodes. So the medication that we take, and I know that a lot of you have said, I don't want to take that medication anymore, because it does funny things to me. Most of all, I hear that, of course, it interferes with our sexual performance. Sometimes I hear that it interferes with work and school performance. So when you take all those things into account, it really is difficult to balance out whether or not I want to take the meds or I don't want to take the meds. I strongly suggest that if your manic episodes or someone that you love is having very serious manic episodes, that means it could be anything from going out and buying a whole bunch of things at one time for friends and you don't even have the money for it. You become so happy, like we talk about euphoria, just so happy, and we talk and talk and talk and talk a lot, okay? That could be a form of manic episode, okay? We don't think logically about what we're doing, okay? We drive very fast down the highway without thinking about the consequences. That's the word I was looking for. It's very hard when we're having a manic episode, for those of us diagnosed with bipolar disorder, to balance out whether or not what the consequences would be. So in the same way, let's get back to this, in the same way that we look at fixing the broken leg, we fix the broken neurons in our brain. The neurons are like nerves in our body, cells in our body that send messages, and they're inside of our brain, and they connect to one another. And so when they're not connecting appropriately, then something has to happen to fix them. And this goes with all of the mental disorders that I can think of at this particular point that we can look at and consciously understand. And so fixing these things, recognizing first that they are real is very important, because so many people don't understand that mental health is just as important as physical health. That discomfort associated with a broken leg is truly no different in the concept than the pain or discomfort associated with your brain, the neurons in your brain not working appropriately, where you feel funny. And when people say, you're crazy, you even get a little irritated at that because you feel that there's something awkward about you. Go back, if you're not sure about what I'm saying, go back and listen to the archived show or shows. I think we did 3 shows on Are You Crazy? So that you can get a real grasp of what we're talking about in not using the word crazy to describe ourselves or to throw around at others, because it could be very harmful, okay? Everything in this life, again, requires that balance. So, my friends, as we work towards the last 10 minutes of the show, I just wanted to make sure that we are clear on what we need to do in order to address the term drugs and eliminate the negative stereotype associated with drugs. We know that we have, and I feel the same way, there's a negative stereotype already about street drugs, and that's for the obvious reason. I mean, they're not distributed correctly, under any kind of control. You don't know who's handing you what. You don't know what you're buying. You don't know if it's what you asked for. There's contamination issues. So street drugs are really just practically, on a practical level, not a great idea. Now, if you have any question on that, it looks like we have a chat coming in. If you have any questions about that, then let me know. But that's where I'm at with street drugs. Now, the pharmaceutical drugs, we still have to be careful of. The drugs that are dispensed by our doctors and by our and followed up by the pharmacist actually giving us the drug. You are in control of your life. You need to understand the side effects of the drugs that you take. You need to take control of what kinds of interactions the drug that's being given to you is going to have with the drugs you're already taking. This, my friends, my dear students and teachers, is your responsibility. Do not count on the doctors and the pharmacists to be the end-all of what medicines you take in your system. They don't want to be anyway. You know, a good doctor, a good pharmacist does not want to be the only one involved in your care. They want you involved in your care, in the care of yourself, and they want you to ask questions. That's why they have the counseling booth at the pharmacy window, okay? That's why they have the doctor will encourage you to go ahead and ask for second opinions, okay? There's absolutely nothing wrong with that. So, in closure for our show today, please excuse the temporary problems that we're having right now with the internet connection. I hope that you're still receiving my broadcast. I'm making sure that we are able to at least close the show today. If you are not able to hear me, know that I wish you much love and peace, much love and peace as we close today. And I did want, and I'm very sorry that I'm not able to get to the chat that came in. Please forgive me. Well, wait a minute. It's back up again. And I think that we can get to that chat session and find out what one of our listeners wants to say about the show today. Okay, and we thank you. It says every week something is new. We love it and thank you. Love you, Professor. Well, thank you, chat room friend. I believe that when you write in a chat with to Professor, that you are truly involved in looking at the show and listening to the show in a very positive way and growing. So I truly appreciate you taking the time, any of you listeners out there, to not only be involved in the show on Saturday morning, but the many of you that listen to the show at your convenience, thank goodness for internet radio, that you have archived shows that you can go back to and listen to, any of the shows that come up. So as we begin to close, I want you to remember something. First, I've said a lot of things about the fact that we need to focus this week on the journey. Please take some quiet time and focus on your own spiritual journey. And I also want, as you're focusing on that spiritual journey and inside of that, I want you to look at what you're putting inside of your body. Because your body is carrying this spiritual self. And it needs to be healthy or it interferes with all of your energy. So look at the fact, if you are drinking Coke, if you are drinking coffee, or if you are smoking and ingesting nicotine, those are the three major ones, that you are still involved in drug use. Even, I cannot miss this. You know I can't miss this. Any of you that know me and have been in my classroom know that I cannot miss saying that even when we're talking about medical marijuana, it is still a drug. It is a drug that follows the same pattern as our endorphins that our Creator has placed already inside of us to produce. So even with that, we have to find balance. Well, I thank you so much for joining us this week. Much love and peace. And I'll speak with you next Saturday as we continue with part 2 of 3 on drugs, school, and work. And we close with beautiful music from Nazim Rashid's River Nile.